This is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 165, and I'm your host, Simon Bowen. And you can enjoy the extended version of this episode ad-free, along with over 160 hours of extended episodes on Patreon. This week, I'm talking to Camille James Harmon about her UFO contact experiences. Camille wrote for UFO magazine from 2000 to 2004. She presented at UFOCon in 2023 and participated in Yvonne Smith's workshop at Contact in the Desert in 2023. She is a founding member of the Hollywood Disclosure Alliance, recently featured in Deadline. She was in episode 13 of season 1 of Alien Disclosure Files on Amazon and, in their own words, Stories of Alien Contact. Hi Camille, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
You're welcome, it's my pleasure.
You have been experiencing all sorts of UFO things throughout your life, but I believe you didn't really first know about it until later on.
I came to the awareness of this when I was about 29 years old in 1995 in Los Angeles. And the more I learned about symptoms of abduction, childhood abduction, things that might be clues to look back at, I've come to the conclusion that I probably had experiences in childhood and I just don't have knowledge of them yet. And it's very interesting in hypnosis. I've tried to target certain things with hypnosis and I get nothing. And other things, I get full-blown memories. And so sometimes when you go looking, it doesn't always work. So some things are still a mystery to me. But I do believe, based on circumstantial things, that I probably had it going on as a kid as well.
Circumstantial? So what sort of things were they? Did you have weird dreams?
I did. I had weird dreams. I had a dream once. I had vampire dreams often, which is very interesting. I had paranormal fears as a child. I didn't have normal fears of, people coming to my house. I had fears more of vampires and the creature from the Black Lagoon and the Slee Stacks on the show The Land of the Lost. And knowing that now, there are crossovers with those creatures, to the abduction experience and some of the beings people describe. And I also had some interesting anomalous memories of, like, I used to walk through the woods to go to my piano teacher's house. We lived against some woods, right up next to some woods, and there was a trail through the woods. And one day I just wouldn't go through the woods anymore, and I made mom drive me, and I don't remember what happened in the woods. I don't know if I saw a snake or if something weird happened, but I have no memory of that, just this terror of going into the woods again after that. And I had very severe nosebleeds as a kid, which is another indicator. I had to have my nose cauterized. The nosebleeds would generally happen at night. I would wake up and the pillow would have blood on it. I also had allergies. I had childhood trauma. I was adopted. I was sexually molested. So other things like that are common themes we see in, we actually see that in alien abduction. We also see it in the case of trauma and abuse, in the case of people that have been put into MKUltra. So there's a lot of crossover between some of the descriptions of MKUltra and alien abduction too, which is interesting. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know a lot of these answers. I just look for red flags like that.
And so was it 1995 when you came across a Whitley Strieber book? It's kind of triggered a real interest.
Right. It was the book that came out that year. I believe it was called Breakthrough or Transformation. I always get them mixed up, but it had a silver and blue cover. It wasn't Communion, the earlier book. It was this newer one. And it did have the face of a gray on it. And it triggered me, I guess you would say, while I was at the bookstore. And I just felt compelled to buy this hardcover book. I hadn't read any of his other books. I had seen the movie Communion, but because I love Christopher Walken, but I hadn't read any. So I just thought, wow, that guy that made that movie Communion. I just thought to myself, he's still writing about aliens. Well, that's interesting. I'd like to know what he thinks now, you know? And so I just got the book and I read it while I was sitting at work at an art gallery in the French Quarter. And it blew my mind. It had so much information on UFOs, alien abduction, military aspects of the cover-up, all that stuff. And it was really my first experience looking at the entirety of the phenomenon. And I was like, this is the most important thing I've ever read. Oh my God, this is huge. What is going on this planet? You know, so that was my awakening. And then I started reading other UFO books. But immediately after reading that Whitley Strieber book, my boyfriend and I at the time moved to LA from New Orleans. So I got to LA and I had everything going for me. I was an actress. He was an actor. We had come off of some wonderful work in New Orleans where we had played in Richard III. He was Richard. I was Lady Anne. We had this great success. And I had recently gotten my master's degree in drama and I had my SAG card. You know, I had everything going for me career-wise when we moved. And we were so excited to find this really cool rental house on a hill. And I had an agent. You know, everything was great. We had a good day job. But I was having all this weird anxiety and weird physical symptoms shortly after moving there in September of 95. And by the time December came around, I had a sighting with him walking the dog. And it was a daylight sighting. And I saw this black thing in the sky that had a shimmer around it. And it was so high, I couldn't make out the shape. But I think it might have been a triangle, but I can't really 100% say what shape it was. But I remember we both saw it and I got so excited. And I left him there with our dog and I ran home to report it. And I reported it to MUFON. And they said, oh, by the way, we have these monthly meetings if you want to come. And I said, oh, yeah, I want to come. You know, they have a speaker every month. And so, but before that, in December, the same time frame, I had an attack of sleep paralysis in the night, which I've had before during my life, but very rarely. But this time, instead of just having the paralysis, I had other weird things associated with being in that paralyzed state. And for one, I heard a voice say my name in my left ear, and it sounded very mechanical, or I would say AI or generated, computer generated now. But back then, I just said it was mechanical sounding. So it was just like a little robot voice saying, Camille, like that in my ear. And it scared the heck out of me. And at the same time, I saw a vision of a gun in my face. And that was very strange, just a flash. And it was the combination of it all was just very, very unsettling. And my boyfriend was in the other room watching a David Lynch movie that I didn't want to watch. And when he came back into sleep with me, it happened again later while he was in the bed. And he heard me coming out of it moaning because my voice was the first thing that broke the paralysis. And I had so much anxiety by New Year's Eve that year. I remember watching the Learning Channel. It was a network that had documentaries and they had a whole like UFO marathon going on. And I actually saw a show in there where a lady described putting a tape recorder under her bed because she had wanted to capture some sounds in her room. And she had actually captured the same thing. She had captured this mechanical sounding voice saying her name. And that I just lost it when I saw that. I was like, oh my God, what is going on? And so that's when I really, you know, with the sighting and everything, started to suspect that I had an abduction. And then when I met Barbara Lamb at a MUFON meeting, after hearing Kim Carlsberg's story and looking at her book in the back at the table and her little checklist in the back of her book, which was called Beyond My Wildest Dreams, Kim Carlsberg, you know, it was like, you might've been abducted if, and it had all these things. And I was like, oh my God, I have like 85% of these things on this list. And I scheduled with Barbara. I had my first regression. I believe it was April of 96. And I had, by the way, since September through December, when I moved to LA, my menstrual cycle had disappeared. And I don't know, I didn't know why that was happening. I never went and got a pregnancy test. I usually would have done that right away, but I just kept waiting for it to come back. And when my boyfriend and I were traveling to LA from New Orleans with the U-Haul and everything, we did stop in Sedona and camp out at Oak Creek. And I mentioned that on a show once and someone said, oh, Greek, that's super paranormal. So I don't know. But all I know is my menstrual cycle came back in January. So under regression with Barbara, I had this full on memory of being abducted from my bedroom that night of the sleep paralysis. That was our target. And I had this blue beam of light come over me. It seemed to me to be very columnar, it didn't spread out. It seemed to be solid. And when it hit me, I curled up into a fetal position and I went up into this light. And I remember, you know, going out of my house and freaking out. And the next thing I knew, I was flat on a table in this white, misty room. And when I say white room, I don't mean the walls were white. I mean, the experience was like a white mist all around me, and not being able to move and being terrified and having these beings standing there looking at me. So that's how it began. And then there was another being I could not see that was between my legs, and my knees started opening with no one touching them. And I was hysterical. And like you said, in your memory, I was screaming and my teeth were chattering, and I was so emotionally terrified in this recall. I always joke, you know, I probably lost 2 pounds in sweat. I was just overcome with terror, like I've never known in my life. I don't have any experience in my regular life where I have been in a state of terror like that. So it was just very primal. And they took this thing out of me, this, what I call a probably a hybrid of some kind, knowing what's happening to everyone else. But I could see this. I could see this little fetus in the slats of this medical instrument, the speculum type thing. And the being that I could not see, that was like cloaked from me, walked quickly out of the room with this tiny little fetus in there. And I was just hysterical with, you know, like outrage and grief. And I said, I didn't even get to see it. And it was just horrible. And, you know, I came home with this little cassette tape to play for my poor boyfriend. And, you know, my life was never the same. He looked at me like, oh, my God, if this is real, and this is really bad. And if it's not real, it's also really bad. And he knew, you know, I was going to be forever changed. And it was true. We ended up breaking up years later. But, you know, it just totally changes your life. It's like a whole different phase. It's kind of like when you have a kid, like when I had my son, my son here on Earth. In 2001, it's kind of like, you know, your life before you have a child and your life after. So it was like that. It was like my life before this alien abduction awareness and my life after.
And were the ETs that were there, were they the typical sort of grays that people describe?
What I recall, the ones that I saw standing in a line, there were a few of them, and they looked all the same, and they had long arms, and they were white and kind of glowing, or I can't tell if they were glowing or not solid, or just the room was so misty that they didn't look fleshy. In other words, they didn't look like I could see them clearly. And they had some kind of a triangle in a circle emblem around their chest. And they had white robes on with long sleeves and a high collar. So they had white long sleeve robes with this high collar and this emblem. And they had the big black wraparound eyes. So that's how I recalled them. And it was telepathic, very minimal conversation, as Barbara was prompting me through the terror of it to get me to talk. You know, I said, everybody's looking at me. Everybody's looking at me. And she said, who is looking at you? And I said, I don't know. And she made me look to the left. Well, you know, look over there and see. And they were telling me to relax. And she said, what do they want? You know, these beings that look so scary, ask them what they want. And I said, I have a baby and they want it. And that, you know, that was just the worst. So, you know, I tried to rationalize it, like process of elimination, you know. I thought, well, what could this be if it wasn't that? You know, what is it like? Is it symbolic? Is it just, I don't know, not real, but, you know, a metaphor for something in my life psychologically? I don't know. But everything I came up with, I couldn't figure it out. And people would say things like, well, maybe you had an abortion and you felt guilty, so you had this memory. And I said, well, I've never had an abortion, so that doesn't make sense for me. next? You know, and I kept trying to figure it out. And I shared this information, obviously, with my family right away. I called them up and they didn't know what to think. You know, I mean, they kind of in shock. And my brother, my mom, I remember she said, "Why can't you be gay like your brother? I know how to do gay." And I was like, "I'm sorry, Mom. I'm not trying to be difficult." And her brother, my uncle Jack McPherson, was a career NASA scientist and a mechanical engineer. He worked under Wernher von Braun on all the early moon programs in the 60s. I lived with him for a while too. I lived with him for a year when I was kind of being passed around the family before I was adopted by my aunt. And I often wonder if I didn't get put in a program or something, just being in his household and maybe going to the base doctor. I don't know. I mean, I'm not trying to blame him. I'm just saying there's a lot of people in this experience that have relatives in the military industrial complex and aerospace and space and all that. And he later worked also on STS. Oh gosh, I forgot the number, but the experiment with the long
tether,
a satellite, the tether. Yeah. The tether thing. He built that with the Italians. And so it snapped. Right. And then all these UFOs were seen swarming it in the footage. And I showed that to him. I showed him I think there was a Dan Aykroyd documentary about it. And he played dumb about knowing that. But later I asked Chris Bledsoe, like, why wouldn't my uncle tell me anything? My uncle always said, "I don't know anything. And if it's true, it's NSA and they're never going to tell you. So you just have to get over it." And Chris Bledsoe said, because he's very familiar with NASA people and what they do know and what they've told him. And he said, "Camille, if he knows anything, he's signed so many NDAs and he could go to prison and you can't push him." He passed away before I met Chris, but my cousin, his daughter is still in NASA and she is one of the payload managers of the space station. Again, she won't say anything to me about it either. So I just have to understand that my family is, if they know anything, you know, bound by law not to discuss until they are allowed to discuss. So, but it unfolded over 1996 and 7. I had other incidences that I went to hypnosis to get more information. I always went with a target. You know, there was always some stimulus that made me go to a session. I just didn't make up stuff. Like the next thing that happened, my boyfriend went back to New Orleans to film something. So I was alone in the house for a week and I woke up three mornings in a row. This was in 1996 in July. I woke up three mornings in a row at 4 a.m. sharp, 4:00 on my digital clock. And I thought, what is going on? I don't hear a noise. Like, why am I awake? The same exact time. And the third morning, I was going to see my friend at the beach and I started shaving my legs and I noticed I had this fresh triangle on my leg, like this puncture wound array of three needle marks. And I thought, oh my goodness, I know this is some alien thing. I've seen it in a book or on some show. This is an alien thing. And so I went and got regressed by a different person this time, Yvonne Smith. And I was just curious to go to her. Barbara's great. Yvonne's great. Both great. But in this memory, I went in the beam of light, the blue beam. But this time they took me through the window, which I thought was weird. And I ended up in a room. It wasn't as a white misty room, though. And this time the room seemed to be more clear. And there were three beings, one at my foot, one at my head, and the other one the other side of my head. And they had wrinkly heads, and all I could see was the tops of their wrinkly heads. They were kind of gray or brown wrinkly heads, and they were very repulsive to me. And I remember when one of them, I was substitute teaching at the time, and I had this experience of having these little kids come up to me that didn't speak English, and they were pulling me toward a cabinet in the classroom. And just the fact of them, they were like third graders, and they were pulling my arms to this cabinet. They were pulling me over to show me something. And my whole body had like a cellular flashback for a second. And it was like, this has happened to me. I have been grabbed by the arms and pulled by short beings before. And I was able to hold it together in the class. But I started yelling at this being. I said, "You make me scared of little kids because you look like little kids, but you're not little kids." I was crying and screeching and so angry. And then it put its hand on my forehead and started stroking my forehead. I said, get your freaking hand off me, you little bastard. But the minute it was doing the stroking, you know, right after it started stroking my head, all my anger melted away. And I was very submissive. And I just calmed down and I just kind of said, just do what you have to do and let me go home. You know, and I just resolved to be still. And then this tall being at my right, there was an apparatus in the ceiling, and I call it a he. He was tall. He had the white robes, the long sleeves, the high collar. He looked like a gray with the big black eyes, the white skin. And I remember fixating on his hands. I thought his white fingers were very long and fascinating and beautiful. I actually said his fingers were beautiful. And he chose a tip from this rack in the ceiling. Just like, it was kind of like a dentist, you know, they would have stuff coming down. And he put it on this tip of this wand. He selected this little tip and put it on this wand and then popped that into my left calf very quickly. And that's what made the triangular mark in my memory. I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was a vaccine or tag or whatever. I had it x-rayed. There was nothing underneath. But that being also had at one point morphed and had antenna on its head. And I started screaming that it looked like a mantis. And so I said grasshopper. No, I said praying mantis. So I don't know if it was a gray that morphed into a mantis or if it was a mantis cloaking as a gray. I don't know what it truly was, but that was my perception. So that was the next regression. And then more and more things happened.
I just wanted to ask there, when you said that it kind of morphed, do you ever think that maybe what you see of them is not their true form anyway?
Yes. I mean, I have serious trust issues. I don't trust anything. I question everything. This comes probably from my childhood experiences. So I never know. And I also, I married an astrologer eventually, and I have Mercury in Libra. And Mercury in Libra, Mercury is your intellect and your brain, and Libra is balance, right? So I always end up seeing all sides of things, but I also have a very difficult time making up my mind about things because I see so many different versions of reality that I don't know which one to pick. So I do have issues with making up my mind about things, with trusting things. I continue to tell my story the same way, but I always say, you know, my conclusions about things have changed over the years drastically. So, and they're subject to continue to change. So I don't claim to have all the answers. I have a lot of questions and a lot of answers.
Can you tell us what happened with your tooth at the dentist's?
Sure. So that was the next thing. I had gone to the dentist to get all my mercury fillings taken out and replaced with the white ones, you know, the nice ones, because I'm an actress and I wanted my teeth to look good. And I told my dentist when I went in there, I said, you know, by the way, I am an alien abductee. I know that sounds crazy, but, you know, I've been reading a lot about it. And sometimes abductees will freak out in the dentist chair because they have flashbacks. And I said, I've never done that at the dentist, but, you know, I just thought you'd like to know that if that ever happens to you or if it happens right now with me. And I said, and the other thing is, if you ever find anything weird in my body, you have to tell me. And he was very open-minded and he said, oh, I read this book, you know, The Day After Roswell. And I said, oh, that's a great book. So he did all my fillings and I noticed that one of my teeth with a new filling was hurting. So I went back and I said, I love my new fillings, but this one, really sensitive to like everything, you know, hot and cold dressing, salad dressing, all that. And he looked at it and he said, well, the seal is good. Give it a little more time and come back. So I gave a little more time. I came back and he said, what I'll do is I'll drill it out and I'll redo it and I'll use a different brand of composite. And I said, okay, we'll try that. So he drilled it out and he got to this point in my tooth that was very hard and what he described as charcoal gray and spherical or half spherical. And he was drilling and drilling on it. And he said, this was not there before. This was not your old filling. I don't know what this is. It's extremely hard. And he kept having to give me shots too. And he said, I don't know what you want me to do. I said, can you get a piece of it? And he said, no, it's so hard that it's turning into dust and I have to keep the water squirting on it. I said, well, just, you know, let's refill it and I'll think about what to do. So I do have an x-ray of it and it does show like a spherical dome in my tooth. So I went to, who did I go to for this? Oh, I went to Barbara for this one. And I did a regression to figure out what how that got there. And I thought I was going to get aliens. And instead, I came to, in the memory, on a table in an exam room with two humans, two guys in white lab coats and khaki pants and shiny black shoes. And I felt drugged. I felt like I was in some kind of a facility. There were cabinets and counters and a door and all that. And the only word I got from them was troublemaker. And one of them, he stuck a syringe through my cheek into my upper, you know, above that tooth. And squirted the syringe in there. And so I don't know what that was. And I was surprised because you would think, like if I was making this up, right, I would remember them going into my mouth and doing something. But no, they just went straight through my face with a syringe. And then they put me on a gurney and rolled me down a hall. And we ended up in this big, I want to say like a hangar. And they put me on this black helicopter. And the ceiling retracted like a like an observatory has a big ceiling that opens up, you know. And we went and it was very bright. It was daytime. And I remember being like blinded by the light. And we went up out of this hangar and they dropped me off in my neighborhood in Silver Lake. There was a field in the neighborhood and it's still a field. I went over there recently. And they just said, go home and take a nap. And now that's where the memory ended. I don't know. I didn't have a memory of me walking back to my house. I didn't have a memory of me being taken from my house. That was the most disturbing experience because it really made me paranoid in a whole different way, as you might imagine. I thought, oh my God, like if that's real and that really happened, then what else has happened that I don't remember with humans? And it was just terrifying. I felt really betrayed by my own species and, you know, it was not good. And I felt drugged. I didn't feel, when I was with the alien memories, I felt aware and alert, but immobilized. But with this memory, I felt drugged and barely conscious. So I don't know. I mean, I know that's the thing that, I don't know who that was. I don't know if it was in the Navy. They had, you know, Navy pants on kind of, but it could have been a contractor. It could have been who knows who. Could have been, you know, a manufactured memory. I don't know. I hate to allege that this is happening by anyone in particular, any group in particular, but that's what my hypnosis memory revealed. And, yeah, so I have this thing with the Navy too. That's interesting. And, like in regular life. So I don't know what to make of that. It was very upsetting. And when Barbara went to give me my cassette, from that regression, it did not record. I don't know if she messed up or the machine wasn't working or it was interfered with in some capacity, but I don't have a recording of that one, which is really annoying because I like to have recordings of my regressions.
And so that was humans that were doing something there. And I've talked to other abductees who've talked about black helicopters, seeing people following them and taking their pictures and weird phone calls. Have you had anything like that?
No, but I, at this time when I was living in that house, I did have an experience. I can't correlate because I wasn't writing in a journal, which I should have been. But I do remember I was in the bathtub one night and there was a helicopter over our house, really low. And I remember being fearful, like what's going on outside our house, you know? And it was circling and hovering. And I got out of the bathtub and I was in the backyard in my robe with my boyfriend. And I remember hearing them say, he's in the backyard from the helicopter, like a a loudspeaker or something. I don't know how I heard them, but I remember going, oh crap, you know, maybe there's a robber running around. Let's go back in the house. So we went back in the house and eventually they just went away. So, I mean, it could have been just a robber in the neighborhood, but it, now that I think back, it could have been something where I have, you know, missing time or I don't remember what that, I mean, it could have been related to me. I don't know. I mean, I hate to be paranoid, but you never know.
Have there been times where something's happened and your husband or a boyfriend has seen something in the middle of the night, maybe just lights or something?
He saw that UFO with me, the one where we were walking the dog, but no. And we ended up breaking up a couple of years later over it. I actually, I became so obsessed, you know, with all of it. And it was secondary to my acting career. And he just couldn't relate to me that way. You know, he just didn't like it. And he wouldn't go to meetings with me. And I ended up going to England to see the crop circle phenomenon in 1998. And I came, he and I had gotten engaged actually. And it was kind of ill-fated. I went to England to see the crop circles and I ended up having a fling with a guy over there while I was engaged. And I came back and I said, I'm really sorry, but I had a fling and, you know, I guess we need to break up. And he said, oh, I'm so glad you had a fling. I was hoping you would, because he wanted to break up, but he didn't want to be the bad guy. So he was relieved actually. And, but we stayed friends and I went to his wedding and, you know, I married soon after, you know, the next year I married somebody else, not the guy from England, but another guy. And, but later he did ayahuasca and he came to me and he said, Camille, I totally get you now. I believe you. I did ayahuasca and I saw beings and I get it. I said, oh, thanks. You know, took you long enough. Yeah, but you know, it's not for everyone. If it doesn't happen to you, it can be hard to understand the fixation. You know,
can you tell us the story about how you met your husband? Because there's something synchronicitous. That's not a word, is it? There's something there.
Well, my favorite aspect of this phenomenon is the recurring, really wild, specific synchronicities that happen. So this was after, right after my trip to England, when I broke up with the fiance broke up with me. Right after that, I was training to be a MUFON field investigator. And I was at the beach. We had this lesson where we all met at the beach and they taught us about things you see in the sky and how to identify aircraft and satellites and various things. And, you know, to eliminate what's not a UFO. And I had a play rehearsal. I had to drive back to Hollywood to get to this rehearsal and I had to leave the meeting early. And I pulled over at this gas station in Malibu, because it was next to the gates of the Malibu Colony, which is where Sting had a house. And I was also obsessed with Sting from the time I was like 15. And so I just was getting gas going, oh, Sting lives right there. And actually I had seen Sting at his house in England when I went to see the crop circles, because that's another whole story. But Sting had come out. Okay. I was at his house near Stonehenge, just being a stalker, hanging out in the street, looking at his house, gorgeous house on 100 acres. Okay, lake house. And a car came and went through the gate. And I thought, oh, I'm going to be nosy and look up in the driveway. It's a long driveway, so that'll be cool to look at. And Sting was standing in the driveway way up the road. And he looked at me and I was so embarrassed. I was like, oh my God, he's right there. And I couldn't even move. And the gate closed. And I came back the next day and I put flowers at the gate. And his security guard came out and said, oh, you were here yesterday. I said, oh yeah, I was here. Sorry. Just a big fan. And once I saw he was actually home, I had to come back for the flowers and a note. So he took my flowers and the note. But I knew Sting had seen UFOs because I'd read that in a biography and I knew he lived in crop circle country. So he was into that too. And so Barbara picked me up the next day at Stonehenge. That was our meeting point because part of my trip was without her and part of my trip was with her. And she said, we're going to your first crop circle. It just happened last night. And I said, oh, great. So we went to it and walked around in it. And then later at the Barge Inn on the bulletin board, we saw that the aerial photo that was taken it was called the Stingray because the shape of it was like this big thing with a long tail that curved. And I thought, oh my God, was that like a gift from the circle makers to me? Because I'm the sting nut that, you know, my very first crop circle would be called the Stingray. I thought it was very synchronistic. But back to my husband. So So I'm getting gas and he's getting gas on his motorcycle and I'm in my car and he saw my bumper sticker that said, I heart England. And he felt compelled to ask me, he said, oh, so what part of England do you love? And he had never been to England. And I said, Wiltshire. I was just in Wiltshire looking at crop circles. And I thought, he's not going to know what I'm talking about. And he said, oh, my friend Jim Delatoso showed me a video of a UFO making crop circles. And I was thinking, you know Jim Delatoso? Because he's kind of a big name in the video analysis of UFOs. He was really big on the Phoenix Lights investigations of the video footage. And he said, what got you into UFOs? And I said, they got into me. And he said, oh, yeah, I had trouble with them as a kid growing up in Wisconsin. And so we started talking at the gas station and, you know, swapped business cards. And then I called him about a month later after I'd gotten over my fling in England because I was still, you know, we were writing letters to each other and all this. And I said, do you remember me from the gas station? He said, oh, yeah. So we had a first date. I showed up at this cafe, the Earth Cafe on Melrose, and he brought his laptop and he typed in my astrology. He was an astrologer. And so he wanted my data, and which I had memorized, and my ex-boyfriend's. And so he said, oh, I bet your ex-boyfriend was like this, this, and this, and you broke up because of this, this, and this. And I was like, oh my God, you're good, man. Dang. And so here we are. We have a son who's almost 23. We got married in 2001. And here we are. And he's had plenty of UFO experiences and some very interesting ones. So yeah, we did find each other or were set up or whatever.
But you've never had anything happen while you two were together?
The only weird thing we had, I met a guy once at a party and he was introduced to me as someone who cleared mind control victims, which is a very interesting introduction. And I said, oh, I want to have a session with you because I wonder if I'm not a mind control victim because some people think alien abduction is a government program of mind control. And he could scan people. So we're at this party and he's scanning me. And I said, I had this thing that, you know, that they found in my tooth and I had a military memory. And he said, well, whatever's in your tooth I get is not functioning anymore. But he said, what have you got in your right shoulder? And I thought, oh my gosh, I forgot about that. And I had woken up from a dream once where I was bitten by a spider and I had this incision on my right shoulder on the back. And I would get this sensation of like a bee sting and then an electrical jolt down my arm. And it would just randomly happen. And he said, I can clear that. And I was like, oh God. So, okay. So I had a session with him and he cleared it later. But anyway, that night that I met him at the party, we went home and went to sleep and we woke up in the middle of the night. And we both felt really, really hot, like abnormally hot. And it wasn't a heat like from the heater being on too high. It was like an internal heat that caused us to be a bit panicked. And we thought, like, what is going on? Like, are we being hit with some kind of weapon? Are we being microwaved? What is happening? So that was kind of weird. And we did go out UFO hunting with a group in the desert once. And we used one of those, we did like a meditation and used a big flashlight, the kind you can plug into your car and shine up at the sky. And we did have something come in and flash us in sequence to what we were flashing and move around. So that was a sighting that we had together. But I think that's it that we've had, you know, at the same time. Yeah.
What about this thing of abductees seeming to have some kind of like, I don't know, a psychic talent activated in them or things like that? Do you have any of these sorts of things?
Well, I don't have anything overtly psychic, but I always joke that my one superpower from all this, or not from this, maybe I've always had this ability, but I can go into a crowded room of people, a party or an event or a film shoot, whatever, and I can sit down right next to a person, and I always have a big mouth, and I start talking about this eventually, and that person has had the experience or a similar experience or is connected in some way on a very synchronistic level with me. I'll give an example. I don't know how it happens. It happens to me constantly. I went to a film shoot and was with a girl once. We were all freezing in bikinis in this trailer waiting for our time to shoot. It was a night shoot at the beach, freezing in California. And I brought up the subject and I mentioned something about the blue beam of light. And she said, oh, I found that. Let's go talk. So we went off and talked. And she said, look, I grew up in Maryland and my dad was very high up in the NSA. And she said, he took me camping when I was a kid. And, you know, we made a fire. We're looking up at the sky. And he says to me, what if I told you God was an alien and this was all just a big experiment? And I thought, oh my God, like, wow. So, you know, that was quite a revealing thing to say to me in my search for understanding and pieces of the puzzle. And, you know, if I hadn't opened my big mouth, I would have never heard that. That happens to me all the time. I went to an event at the Reagan Library recently to see a Q&A on the movie Reagan. And I sat at this table. Well, first of all, I sat next to a couple. I went by myself, sat next to my couple, a couple in the auditorium, and started talking to them. Oh, I'm an actress. Oh, I'm also into UFOs. And they said, oh, our daughter, oh, I work at Lockheed, and my daughter works with Ryan Graves in his new organization. I was like, what? Wow. What are the odds? And Ryan Graves is one of the Navy whistleblowers who started his own organization for pilot safety in reporting UFOs. And then we all go to dinner in the big banquet area and sit at this table randomly. And the whole table is full of engineers from various aerospace. And they're all fascinated by me and my UFO stories. So, you know, that was weird. I mean, this happens to me all the time. I'll go to a Christmas party and I'll meet an abductee. That's happened a couple of times. So that's my superpower. You know, and a lot of it obviously comes from me being the first one to bring up the subject. But it just makes me think, wow, this is really common. Or I just have this ability to be, you know, attracted to the person in the room that's going to be part of my unveiling.
Are you still doing the regressions with the hypnotherapists, or did you stop that a while ago?
You know, I have done some recently, but they have not been as fruitful. I've gone to Yvonne Smith. One time I volunteered at Contact in the Desert in 2023. I was there last year too, but in 2023, I was her demonstration client. And she did a workshop on hypnosis, and I was the person she hypnotized. And I targeted some things that have happened more recently. And I was hoping to get vivid memories like I had before, but I got vague memories. But there were also, I mean, I got emotional. I had some memory, but it didn't work like it did previously. But I did have a lot of distracting noise. There were a lot of people going in and out of doors around us. There were conferences on the other, you know, on the other side of the walls that I could kind of hear. And the couch they provided was kind of short, so my legs were hanging off the end onto a chair. It was a bit, you know, not conducive to being under hypnosis. So I have had some, but not. And I've tried to target this child. I mean, allegedly that I have this hybrid, which would be an adult now. But I have not gotten anywhere with that.
And do you feel that you would be less scared now if stuff happened?
Well, I do think I would be less scared because I have more knowledge and I have met more people who have had positive experiences. Like I met Chris Bledsoe in 2023, in I think February, when he was here for Alien Con. Yeah, Alien Con. And I had been reading his book. I really hit it off with him. I found his energy to be fantastic. And he told me, I also had recently taken a video. It's on my YouTube channel. People can watch it in the shorts. I have to explain that in 2013, my husband and I moved to Arizona in 2005. We were living in Tucson in 2013. And we had a lot of sightings there. And I was in MUFON and everything. But then at one point, I had this born again Jesus experience. And I thought it was all demonic. And I dropped out and I went back to church. And I was going to the Latin Mass, which is very, you know, formal and old school and very beautiful. And I just was not into UFOs for like 9 years. Even when we moved back to LA in 2015, I was just not interested. I was going to Mass. And it was very hard on my marriage, you know, being married to an astrologer who, you know, makes a living doing something the church doesn't like people to do. And But around 2022, I came back into UFOs and I thought, you know, I don't think it's all demonic. I think it's more complicated. And I started going to conferences and I was reading Chris Bledsoe's book in 2023. And I got invited to speak to a conference again because I used to do a lot of public speaking. I spoke for MUFON groups and other groups. I was very out of the closet. I've been in some documentaries and podcasts and things. And I started doing all that again. And I prayed at this church. I said, it was in a tent at the time. And I had a view of the sky while I was actually in mass. And I said, okay, Jesus, seriously, I'm going to go speak at this UFO thing. And I'm nervous. Like, I don't want to make you mad. I don't want to. I said, if you are working with any beings in the good UFOs, or no, any good beings in the UFOs, please give me a sign that would really help me re-enter this whole fray of ufology. And I looked up and my little square of the little triangle of the sky that I could see from where I was sitting. And I saw these four things come out of the clouds and start flying around very, very high up. And they were flying around each other. And I whipped out my camera and I got it on camera for a few seconds. And I mean, it blew me away. I thought, wow, I mean, that's my answer. Okay. And I think they were UFOs. I think they were orbs or something. I have shown the video to other people who think they might have been birds. I don't think they were birds. However, if they were birds, then to me that was still a sign because the Holy Spirit is a white bird and they were white. So I showed it to the priest. I was all excited. I was like, look what happened, you know? And I don't know what to make of that video. It moved me and I showed it to Chris Bledsoe in my phone when I met him. And he said, Camille, those were angels. And he calls the orbs angels. And he believes they are a form of the beings and the beings step out of them in his experience. So he was encouraging me to be open-minded about future interactions. And he said, just tell God, God, I'm willing to work with your angels again. And I was like, well, Chris, I'm willing to work with the light beings that I saw, which is a whole other thing I didn't mention yet. But I don't want to be on the table with those scary aliens. And so I had, I can't remember what we were talking about. There's so much. It just goes on and on, the connection.
No, this is great.
I forgot what I was saying, like what you had asked. I forgot what you had asked. I went off. But I, you know, I've changed my mind many times, like I said. And shortly after meeting Chris, I did have like a hitchhiker effect. I went home and I stood outside and looked at the sky and I said, okay, God, I'm willing to work with your good angels. But, oh, I remember you were asking me about if I'd be brave or willing to have experiences or something like that. And I said, but God, I'm willing to have UFO sightings and I'm willing for things to happen to me in my dreams. But if your beings appear to me like while I'm conscious, like right in front of me, I think I will have a heart attack or I don't know. Like, I don't know if I can handle that. So let's keep it, you know, let's ease into this idea if we're going to do this. So that night, or it might have been the next night, I remember it was really right after. Oh, and I also heard owls while I was making that prayer outside. And owls were another recurring theme with Chris Bledsoe and other people. And I had this experience where I left my master bedroom where my husband was sleeping because he was keeping me awake. And I went into the guest room to sleep. And while I was sleeping in that room, I awoke with the feeling that something was touching my neck, like a doctor would probe my neck. And I kind of froze and I thought, oh my God, are you here? And I was too afraid to turn around. And then in my in-between state of being awake and asleep, I turned around and I saw two beings that looked like humans with beards and short brown hair. And they were both looking at me very, like with blank expressions, not smiling, not frowning, just blank expressions. And then that ended. So I don't know what that was, but I am curious. And I do have a, like a hump in my neck there. I have like a cervical issue. So maybe they were trying to heal me. I don't know what that was about, but I called Chris and I said, Chris, what do you think? And he said, it sounds like it might have been real because maybe they set it up so that you would leave that room and go into the guest room so they could come to you. And I thought, yeah, maybe. So that was kind of weird.
And you had a out-of-body experience, didn't you, that sounded more like a near-death experience with that kind of spiritual edge to it?
This was early on, too. So I had the hybrid removal, and then I had the triangle thing, and then I had the military abduction memory. And then I had this feeling, I kept saying things like, oh, humans this, humans that. And I thought, why am I talking like I'm not a human? And I had this longing for beings, but I didn't know who I was longing for. And I went to Barbara and I said, Barbara, can we target this feeling of longing that I have? Like, it's not an event, really. It's just a feeling. And is that doable? And she said, yeah. So we did a session, and I came to in the session, I had this total panic attack screaming about being in this body. And I felt like somebody was stuffing a sofa into a pillowcase. And I just said, I don't want to be in this body. It's so weak. And I was panicking. And she said, well, go to when you weren't in this body, you know, and I popped out and I was in the void or space, and it was black and I couldn't see stars or anything, but I was like, I was in the void and I was a blue orb. I was a blue light. And I recognized my two friends floating around, and they were blue lights. And I was crying. And I looked and I saw Earth spinning. And I said, I don't want to go to Earth. It was like being on a diving board. And she said, well, why do you have to go to Earth? And I said, I don't know. And she said, well, ask why you have to go to Earth. And then these white light beings, so I asked, and these white light beings that were bigger than us, that were massive and amorphous. And they did seem to have a humanoid form within the white light, but I couldn't make out faces or anything. And I just felt like extreme love and ecstasy and knowledge and timelessness and overwhelming merging with these beings. And I was saying things like, they're my home, they're my family, they're why I wear a white bathrobe. You know, I just felt like those are my people. And I was just overcome with ecstatic weeping and union with these beings. And I said, why do I have to go to Earth? And they said, the Earth needs you. I said, why? And they said, to fight evil. And I was taken aback. And I thought, okay, what am I supposed to do? And am I supposed to lecture about you? And they said, tell people we exist and that we love them. And they gave me this image where we were shining light towards the Earth. And I was one of them in this image. And there was something coming from central source through us. And we were shining light towards the Earth. And they said, we're always here doing this, but it's like you all are walking around with umbrellas and we have to get to you past the umbrella. And I said, well, am I supposed to lecture about you? What am I supposed to like do? And they said, you're still supposed to act. And I'm an actress, right? So I said, really? Because Hollywood, you know, they make all this crap and I don't know about that. I'm like, really? And they said, don't worry. We will set it up so that you make projects and meet people that are worthy of your time. And I thought, wow, well, that sounds amazing. Please do that. Yes, I will keep acting if you can do that. Wow. And I ended up, they said, the reason you work so many jobs, because I was catering and faux finishing and like doing all these crazy actor jobs. They said, it's because you're trying to reach as many people as possible. And you always share your story wherever you go. But the way you'll be taken on a larger scale, more seriously, is if you do it through your acting. And you'll reach more people with less effort, basically. And I said, okay. And so it was weird because the very next film I did, it was just a short film. I was at USC. It was like a, you know, graduate student film, but it was called The Encounter. And it was about a man who had an angelic encounter. And then the next agent I got was an abductee, which was really weird. And then, you know, I've done other films where I felt like I was exposing evil or fighting evil. The film Vice about Dick Cheney comes to mind. But I've done other projects which were not, you know, along those lines. And so I'm not like holier than thou in the projects I pick. I do try to, you know, be available to do good moral projects, but I don't only do those. And but we'll see. And now I'm in this group called Hollywood Disclosure Alliance that formed last year, and it's pretty cool. And it's a networking group of Hollywood people and UFO people to get together and make projects about this subject, documentaries, fiction, whatever, but to know who's who and who's friendly to the subject matter. And we also push for disclosure through our films. And so that's been really fun. I've done some documentaries, you know, because of being in that. And I just keep at it, you know. I did back off of my aliens or demons theory, and I'm more open-minded now about that not being the whole story. I don't think it's totally, I didn't throw it away, but it's like on the, you know, level playing field with the other contenders for what aliens are. So, and the Catholic Church, even though I'm not a great Catholic, they are very much into getting ahead of this subject as it unfolds. You know, they know a lot. They hide things in the Vatican. They know things. So they're trying to stay relevant as this becomes more on the minds of the public. Yeah, for sure.
Can you tell people where they can find your YouTube channel? What do they type in?
Sure. It's Camille James Harmon. It's my name. And I don't have much on there, but I do have the video of my sighting at church. And I have another video of flashing lights that I took coming out of a Hollywood Disclosure Alliance holiday party. And some people have been seeing these flashing lights on buildings associated with the drones being overhead. So even though we didn't see a drone, it was cloudy, the building lights were flashing. And I thought that was weird. Also, I have a playlist on there. And if you click my playlist that says clips of me being interviewed by UFOs, you'll see all my earlier UFO interviews, if that's interesting. My website in general is CamilleJamesHarmon.com, and just spell Harmon with an A-N, CamilleJamesHarmon.com. And there are links there to some of my acting work and news about upcoming shows and documentaries. So I have it all on one website, the acting and the UFO stuff.
Yeah, and I'll put links in the show notes so people can get straight to it. And thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
You're very welcome. I think you asked great questions and I really enjoyed it.
Thanks a lot. And that was an interview with Camille James Harmon about her UFO contact experiences. And a great way to support the podcast is to sign up to Patreon, where you can get exclusive access to the extended version of this episode. Just go to patreon.com/alienufopodcast. When you sign up, you get access to the episodes in the back catalogue. They are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And if you want to try out the extended episodes, you can now get a 7-day free trial. And my website is pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The link is in the show notes. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.